Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. It's Friday, December 21st, and the Christmas holiday is fast approaching. Like many of our listeners, neither I nor Courtney Reese, our producer, will be working next week. So this episode of The Sounds of Science officially counts as the last podcast of 2007. In the spirit of end-of-year nostalgia, I went hunting through the archives for a topic that would say farewell to the year in an appropriate way. While initially drawn to an oldie but goodie, Dental Education at the Crossroads, I realized that this was entirely motivated by a recent spate of visits to my own dentist and probably wasn't an especially good choice, though I could have provided some really good and entirely authentic sound effects and personal asides. But as I reluctantly shelved this initial choice, I spied a copy of On Being a Scientist. On Being a Scientist is one of the most popular publications that we've ever published here at the National Academies. Now in its second edition and written for beginning researchers, it's subtitled Responsible Conduct in Research and seeks to describe the ethical foundations of the scientific practices and some of the personal and professional issues that researchers encounter in their work. It's meant to apply to all forms of research, whether in academic, industrial, or governmental settings, and to all scientific disciplines. Over 200,000 copies of the book have made their way into the hands of graduate and undergraduate science students, and it continues to be widely used today in courses, seminars, and informal discussions, both in the United States and abroad. As I glance through the pages of this book, this truly seemed the perfect way to conclude the year in the Sounds of Science, as this guide is for anyone involved in or concerned with the scientific enterprise. In the past, young scientists learned the ethics of research largely through informal means, by working with senior scientists and watching how they dealt with ethical questions. That tradition is still vitally important. But science has become so complex and so closely intertwined with society's needs that a more formal introduction to research ethics and the responsibilities that these commitments imply is also needed, an introduction that can supplement the informal lessons provided by research supervisors and mentors. Though On Being a Scientist is aimed primarily at graduate students and beginning researchers, its lessons apply to all scientists at all stages of their scientific careers. In particular, senior scientists have a special responsibility in upholding the highest standards for conduct, serving as role models for students and young scientists, designing educational programs, and responding to alleged violations of ethical norms. Senior scientists can themselves gain a new appreciation for the importance of ethical issues by discussing with their students what had previously been largely tacit knowledge. In the process, they help provide the leadership that's essential for high standards of conduct to be maintained. The geneticist Barbara McClintock once said of her research, "I was just so interested in what I was doing, I could hardly wait to get up in the morning and get at it. One of my friends, a geneticist, said I was a child, because only children can't wait to get up in the morning to get at what they want to do." Anyone who has experienced the childlike wonder evoked by observing or understanding something that no one has ever observed or understood before will recognize McClintock's enthusiasm. The pursuit of that experience is one of the forces that keep researchers rooted to their laboratory benches, climbing through the undergrowth of a sweltering jungle, or following the threads of a difficult theoretical problem. To succeed in research is a personal triumph that earns and deserves individual recognition, but it's also a communal achievement, for in learning something new, the discoverer both draws on and contributes to the body of knowledge held in common by all scientists. Scientific research offers many other satisfactions in addition to the exhilaration of discovery. Researchers have the opportunity to associate with colleagues who have made important contributions to human knowledge, with peers who think deeply and care passionately about subjects of common interest, and with students who can be counted on to challenge assumptions. With many important developments occurring in areas where disciplines overlap, scientists have many opportunities to work with different people, explore new fields, and broaden their expertise. Researchers often have considerable freedom both in choosing what to investigate and in deciding how to organize their professional and personal lives. They're part of a community based on ideals of trust and freedom, where hard work and achievement are recognized as deserving the highest rewards. And their work can have a direct and immediate impact on society, which ensures that the public will have an interest in the findings and implications of research. But these satisfactions are often paired with frustrations and disappointments. An experiment may fail because of poor design, technical complications, or the sheer intractability of nature. A favored hypothesis may turn out to be incorrect after consuming months of effort. Colleagues may disagree over the validity of experimental data, the interpretation of results, or credit for the work done. Difficulties such as these are virtually impossible to avoid in science. They constrain the composure of the beginning and senior scientist alike, yet struggling with them can also be a spur to important progress. Scientific progress and changes in the relationship between science and society are creating new challenges for the scientific community. The numbers of trained researchers and exciting research opportunities have grown faster than have the available financial resources, which has increased the pressure on the research system and on individual scientists. Research endeavors are becoming larger, more complex, and more expensive, creating new kinds of situations and relationships among researchers. The conduct of research is more closely monitored and regulated than it was in the past. The part played by science in society has become more prominent and more complex, with consequences that are both invigorating and stressful. To non-scientists, the rich interplay of competition, elation, frustration, and cooperation at the frontiers of scientific research seems paradoxical. Science results in knowledge that's often presented as being fixed and universal. Yet scientific knowledge obviously emerges from a process that is intensely human, a process indelibly shaped by human virtues, values, and limitations, and by societal contexts. How is the limited, sometimes fallible work of individual scientists converted into the enduring edifice of scientific knowledge? The answer lies partly in the relationship between human knowledge and the physical world. Science has progressed through a uniquely productive marriage of human creativity and hard-nosed skepticism, of openness to new scientific contributions, and persistent questioning of those contributions and the existing scientific consensus. Based on their observations and their ideas about the world, researchers make new observations and develop new ideas that seem to describe the physical, biological, or social world more accurately or completely. Scientists engaged in applied research may have more utilitarian aims, such as improving the reliability of a semiconductor chip, but the ultimate effect of their work is the same. They're able to make claims about the world that are subject to empirical tests. The empirical objectivity of scientific claims is not the whole story, however. The reliability of scientific knowledge also derives partly from the interactions among scientists themselves. In engaging in these social interactions, researchers must call on much more than just their scientific understanding of the world. They must also be able to convince a community of peers of the correctness of their concepts, which require a fine understanding of the methods, techniques, and social conventions of science. By considering many of the hard decisions that researchers make in the course of their work, On Being a Scientist examines both the epistemological and social dimensions of scientific research. It looks at such questions as, how should anomalous data be treated? How do values influence research? How should credit for scientific accomplishments be allocated? What are the borderlines between honest error, negligent error, and outright misconduct in science? These questions are of interest to more than just the scientific community. As the influence of scientific knowledge has grown throughout society, non-scientists have acquired a greater interest in assessing the validity of the claims of science. With science becoming an increasingly important social institution, scientists have become more accountable to the broader society that expects to benefit from their work. Bruce Alberts, former president of the National Academy of Sciences, has said that the future of science depends on attracting outstanding young people to research. Not only people of enormous energy and talent, but people of strong character who will be tomorrow's leaders. It's incumbent on all scientists and all administrators of science to help provide a research environment that, through its adherence to high ethical standards and creative productivity, will attract and retain individuals of outstanding intellect and character to one of society's most important professions. As we end the year and reflect on the myriad societal issues that are related to the scientific enterprise, Dr. Alberts' words seem especially timely, though they will no doubt remain relevant far into the future. As we head into 2008, questions abound and answers, those you can trust and rely on, are often in short supply. It is the mission of the National Academies to improve government decision-making and public policy, increase public education and understanding, and promote the acquisition and dissemination of knowledge in matters involving science, engineering, and health. We want you to know that we take this charge seriously and work to inform policies and actions that have the power to change the world. We thank you for listening to the Sounds of Science podcast today and all the other days you may have listened, and look forward to meeting up again next year. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.